Today's Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Gowan Canada, the go-to company. Gowan's herbicide portfolio includes Avidex and Fortress, which control Group 1 and Group 2 resistant wild oats. Don't let wild oats rob your yields. Use Avidex and Fortress to stop them in their tracks. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, the Manitoba Cooperator's Lorraine Stevenson reports on Canadian prairie garden puree products being placed into receivership.
And a court document details secured creditors is owed a total of just over $6.1 million.
Brian Cross of the Western Producer investigates government consultations into eliminating deferred cash purchase tickets for grain deliveries.
They're going to have to switch from one system to another. This could be a hard transition in the short term.
Michael Rain, managing editor of the Western Producer, previews an upcoming special report on farm machinery breaks. And Commodity News Service Canada's Dave Sims brings us his take on the markets.
Buying from the U.S. is still slow these days, but there's a few animals moving south, so end users probably wanting to get their hands on some animals.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Brian McLeod.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows, a weekly podcast by Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Brian McLeod. Canadian Prairie Garden Puree Products has been processing vegetables and fruits at the Food Development Center in Portage-la-Prairie since it launched in 2012, but has run into financial difficulties this spring. Lorraine Stevenson of the Manitoba Cooperator has been following this story. She's with us now to tell us what went wrong and whether there is a future for Canadian Prairie Garden Puree. Thanks for joining us, Lorraine.
You're welcome, Brian.
Tell us about this company and its founder.
Well, Canadian Prairie Garden Puree Products is a relatively new company in Manitoba. It's been in business for 5 years. Its co-founder and chief operating officer, Kelly Bolio, is a professional agronomist and a businesswoman. This company has some very sophisticated technology. It was developed in Australia, and it purees, and by a process called rapid steam infusion, it quick cooks fruits and vegetables. So that locks in their color and their flavor and their nutrition and creates a very stable, shelf-stable, fresh product. The company's been producing these vegetable purees for various food manufacturers of baby foods and soups and other food products since 2012. When Kelly announced her plans 5 years ago, she said at the time she was looking for a way to use cull vegetables, or what were significant volumes of otherwise perfectly good and nutritious vegetables that Manitoba growers were producing but couldn't sell because they weren't eye perfect. You know, so split carrots and so forth. However, as the product caught on with buyers, Canadian Prairie Garden Puree Products has been contracting entire fields from growers, and it's been a going concern as far as we knew. In January of 2014, the U.S. FDA and Canadian Food Inspection Agency certified the plant. In early summer last year, Kelly was telling us in an interview she'd also found intense demand for organic product and had contracted for multiple organic acres in 2016, including farmers with certified acres, but those who'd never actually grown vegetables before. So overall, the business seemed to be ticking along, and of course that's been prompting vegetable growers in Manitoba to make producing for the company a bigger and bigger part of their business plan. And they were contracting with Canadian Prairie Garden Puree Products to grow a whole variety of vegetables to meet its the facility's current and projected demands. And that would include contracts for vegetables like carrots and squash and kale and pumpkins.
So what happened this spring? It seemed to be derailed.
Yeah, well, we were very surprised to learn on the 22nd of March that secured creditors of the company were granted a receivership order by Court of Queen's Bench in Winnipeg. The accounting firm Myers Norris Penny was appointed as receiver of all the company's assets and property and undertakings. And the court document details secured creditors as owed a total of just over $6.1 million and unsecured creditors a further $3.6 million. So a huge bombshell for Manitoba's vegetable industry and processing sector.
Do we know what went wrong for this business?
No, Brian, we don't. I've asked the company's COO for an interview, of course, but she's not saying anything right now other than to express hope that this isn't the end of the business and that they hope to be back in business soon. She has said so on two separate occasions, in fact. But last week, I did do some background reading on Canadian Prairie Garden Puree products, which, you know, has had significant interest from business analysts, and they continuously referred to this company as a quote-unquote game changer with a truly innovative product. But, you know, we know that that means facing a very significant challenge of convincing manufacturing customers with standardized processes and who are also largely bottom-line driven to do things in new ways. But what has gone so horribly wrong? Short answer to your question, we don't know right now.
So what does this mean for farmers, the farmers that were supplying it?
In short, this is devastating for them. Producers were ready to go with seed bought and acres dedicated for growing for the company this spring. And they are just a couple of weeks away, really, for starting to plant for transplants for 2017. So now what do they do with those acres? You can't find another market for them that quickly. So the news really couldn't come at a worse time for them. And these producers have also made sizable investments in specialized equipment like washers and harvesters, or in buildings such as greenhouses and other farm buildings, and all done in anticipation of supplying the company's capacity requirements. And in addition to those losses, they're also owed a significant amount of money for the vegetables they delivered to the company in 2016. They were trying last week to figure out how much that is, but the number I was hearing was it could be as much as $1.5 million owed to growers. And, you know, Brian, importantly, the farmers affected, which would include both larger and smaller commercial vegetable growers, say it's not just them that's going to get hurt by this. The Vegetable Growers Association of Manitoba Association put out a press release today, April 3rd, and its president, Roland Jeffries, was talking about businesses in Portage la Prairie having invested in the company, as well as jobs on farms being lost. There's tradespeople and, you know, other product and service providers to the company and to farms affected, and at least 10 people lost their jobs at the facility in Portage la Prairie itself. So very bad news for everyone involved.
Now, the company has said that it hopes to bounce back. What should we look for next?
Well, we'll see. You know, the same news release that vegetable growers put out yesterday says that growers want to see this business kept in Manitoba and that there is still time to get the plant up and running again for this year's crop. So one grower I spoke to last week said that vegetable growers, those that have been affected by this, have been meeting to talk about their options, including whether they might find investors and perhaps assume some ownership of it themselves. But they are going to need to see the company's financials first, of course. You know, I would only add to that saying undoubtedly both provincial and federal levels of government don't want to see this end this way. Canadian Prairie Garden Puree was actually the first Canadian business to receive a $2.5 million repayable loan under the Harper government's Agricultural Innovation Program in 2012. And this business is housed at the Food Development Center, which is the province's own special operating agency under Manitoba Agriculture. There's been significant public dollars invested in this company. So let's see what happens next.
Well, thank you for this, Lorraine. We'll check back with you in a few weeks for further developments.
You're welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Lorraine Stevenson writes for the Manitoba Cooperator. You can read more on this story in the latest issue. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Brian McLeod. Joining us now is Michael Rain, Managing Editor of the Western Producer. Mike is going to talk about breaks on farming equipment.
Thanks, Brian. Well, we've just finished a major piece in the Western Producer and on producer.com about breaks in farming equipment. We're seeing more in North America. We're starting to see more attention coming to breaking. The American Society of Agriculture and Biological Engineers have come down with a new breaking strategy, some new rules for manufacturers and guidelines that can be looked at. Europe's had this for years. It's a part of every piece of heavy equipment that we see on in the EU. And for North America, quite frankly, the equipment's larger, bigger masses. So we in one of the stories actually talks about how do you stop a mountain of iron, and it really does come down to some as the equipment has grown, breaking hasn't grown along with it. We often rely on the machines to stop in the field, but for those who farm other than on the flats, they're needing to be able to even hold equipment back in the fields. We're talking machinery that can, a seed cart, for instance, or a manure cart can exceed 200,000 pounds. These things are, when you attach that to a tractor, a ballasted four-wheel drive tractor, it's 60,000 pounds, a drill for another 30 to 80,000 pounds. We're getting into some very large masses rolling down both roads and in fields. So braking systems are changing, and North American manufacturers, some say, have been slow to address it. Others are saying they're addressing it. A lot of the equipment, large manure spreaders, grain carts, and seeding equipment that's been an option on machinery. It's an option on harrows, for instance, from companies like Degelmann. Bourgault has made it part of their large carts. John Deere's new 8 Series carts have come out with brakes. Now that we're working through, well, how do we keep them cool when farmers really start to use them in the fields to keep machinery from skewing, while keeping a drill from skewing while moving downhill, for instance. So anyway, we've addressed it in a four-page series in print and online. It seems to be gaining a lot of traction with farmers. So we're quite excited to have done that work.
This is an interesting issue. Thanks for this, Mike.
Thanks, Brian.
You can read more on this story in the Western Producer's most recent issue. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Brian McLeod. In its recent budget, the federal government announced it's holding public consultations into the possibility of eliminating deferred cash purchase tickets for grain deliveries. Brian Cross writes for the Western Producer. He's been following this story and is here to tell us about it. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, my pleasure, Brian.
Now, the general manager of the Alberta Wheat Commission, Tom Steve, has said this would have a dramatic impact on a large number of farmers. Can you tell us what this program means to farmers?
The farmers that I spoke to, Brian, said that it would affect their cash flow management options pretty drastically. If they're unable to manage their cash flow, it's going to have some pretty significant tax implications for some operators.
So why is the federal government considering eliminating this program?
I'm not sure what the rationale is there. Based on information that I have, the government wanted to explore the possibility of eliminating it. There's obviously some revenue implications there. The genesis of the deferred cash purchase tickets was tied up. It was initially introduced as part of the Canadian Wheat Board's system of paying for grain deliveries. So with the elimination of the Canadian Wheat Board, I think they see a rationale for or a reason to review the need to continue deferred cash tickets.
Now, how would this affect the farmers who are planning year on year? I mean, could they, for instance, change the timing of their grain deliveries to avoid the tax implications that come in a year of high revenue?
I think they could look at that option. Usually farmers have delivery contracts that they have to live up to, and they have cash flow needs as well. So it might be a situation for some growers where they're going to have to switch from one system to another. It's going to be a hard transition in the short term if they have to make cash flow adjustments to that extent over a relatively short period of time, which is why the government has also invited feedback on transition periods that might be required.
And this will generally affect farms that are not incorporated?
I think, if my understanding is correct, it would affect more than just incorporated farms or unincorporated farms. An incorporated farm would perhaps have the implications on some farms would obviously be different than others, but I don't think I'd want to comment on how any individual farm would be affected.
And farmers have until when to offer their public consultation?
I believe it's the end of May, which coincides with seeding for a lot of farmers. So I think there's a little bit of discomfort there among some farm groups that they have to submit their feedback during one of the busiest times of the year.
It's May 24th, is
I believe so.
Well, comments can be sent to consultation_tax_2017@canada.ca. You can find that address in Brian's story in The Western Producer. Brian writes for The Western Producer. Watch for the print publication for further developments. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Brian McLeod. Dave Sims writes for Commodity News Service Canada. Dave is here to tell us what's up in the livestock markets. So, Dave, how's the market looking?
Well, thanks. We're looking pretty good, I think. There's good volumes at Manitoba markets, that's for sure. Heavier weight steers and heifers were chopping around a bit as far as price is concerned. When you compare prices last week to the week before, they were relatively similar, I think. But when you look back to September, those heavier weights are still up by 3 to 5 cents per pound in a lot of cases. So it's not like we're seeing abnormally low prices right now. They're quite solid. And when you get down to the lighter weights, so the situation is better. Last week, steers in, say the 400 to 500-pound range were had a floor level of $1.90 per pound, but the top-end bids were much stronger than the week before, so we could even be rising a little bit here in the market.
So what are some of the reasons for that rise in price?
Well, some of it is seasonal, I guess. Demand is strong, especially from the east. And for the past couple months, we've seen some pretty strong interest from Ontario. And Alberta's buying, of course, and local interest. Buying from the U.S. is still slow these days, but there's a few animals moving south. And there's maybe a few ideas out there, too. I suspect that the market was underbought, so end users probably wanting to get their hands on some animals, thinking prices could be heading higher, and the main driver, of course, still U.S. futures. The futures boards were climbing significantly in the past couple of weeks, and that helped. And the Canadian dollar was showing a bit of softness. It's about 74.5 cents, roughly, the past couple of days, and back on March 15th, it was well over 75. So the dollar's helping a bit, too, I think.
What are the chances that the market will turn lower in the next few weeks?
Well, I talked to one guy last week, and he said we might have peaked already, so prices could be set to plateau here, possibly. And when we look to the U.S., there is some bearish data coming from the USDA, and that data was the slaughter numbers, and they were extremely high, along with some of the production numbers coming out of the U.S. So basically, the thought is the rise in volumes will weigh down the price, and it's the meat packers in particular who are going to start to see their margins starting to collapse. And also, I mean, I think there's still some worry in the U.S., a trade war with Mexico and maybe even China. If it happens, that would be bad news for meat exports. And that would drive the futures lower in the short term, at least.
What about the spring weather? Do you think that'll have any effect on farmers? Will it make it a little easier for them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, we definitely have some warm temperatures. And the exception, of course, is the Southwest. They have more water than they know what to do with. So I think pastures generally in the province will be looking pretty good. The Southwestern Manitoba, and I think also, you know, South Central, it's going to be a little bit before they dry out. So that will be a headache. Unfortunately, though, we're not short of feed. We're starting, as far as producers go and feed lots, I think we're starting in the spring in a pretty good position feed-wise. There's lots of hay around, lots of seed around, and silage crops were pretty good last year. And, you know, corn and soybean prices are manageable. So it could be worse.
Well, thanks for this, Dave.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Dave Sims writes for Commodity News Service Canada. That's it for an edition of Between the Rows. I'm Brian McLeod. Thanks for listening.
We'd like to thank Gowan Canada, our sponsor for today's Between the Rows podcast. Remember, if you have Group 1 or 2 resistant wild oats on your farm, use Avidex or Fortress to control them. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.